Sometimes you got to talk fast to be on the radio, ladies and gentlemen, and sometimes you don't. So how about that Super Bowl, huh? It's coming up, or it's happened, depending on when you hear this broadcast. But you know me, I don't like football. I don't like football. Don't care if football were wiped off the face of the earth would be more descriptive. Except for that XFL, man. I think Dick Ebersol's onto something. And I think he's got a prescription for it. Anyway, my interest in the Super Bowl was twofold. One, to see if CBS was premiering on the Super Bowl today a new technology for not quite a 360, but a 270 degree rotation of a freeze frame. And they were trying it for the first time on live TV on the Super Bowl. So, of course, you got to root for that. And secondly, another little stunt, but a slightly less original stunt by the good people at CBS. Palm Beach County Canvassing Board Chairman Charles Burton, remember him? Not the guy with the big magnifying glass, the other one. He gets a five-second extension of his 15 minutes of fame on the Super Bowl pregame show today. He was part of a promo in which CBS spliced clips of two dozen famous faces, including Joe Namath and the Backstreet Boys, tossing a football from New York to Baltimore to Tampa, where the Super Bowl is occurring. It rang a bell with me. It rang a bell all the way back from 1985 when Ronald Reagan was emceeing, was actually tossing the coin for the first Super Bowl ever broadcast by ABC. And as he was rehearsing the Super Bowl coin toss, he passed on this great idea.
Are you comfortable?
Mm-hmm. Okay. I have to tell you, Frank Sinatra had a recommendation. Instead of tossing the coin, what would have been a lot better? It'd have had me outdoors, throwing out the ball. I would have thrown it. No, wait a minute. A little artwork of maybe a ball going across a map, and out there, one of them catching a ball as if it's going all the way across the United States. How about that?
How about that? CBS likes it, too. So, you know, you steal from the Gipper. But who's counting? Literally. Ladies and gentlemen, on a serious note, I want to start this broadcast by saying a fond and sad farewell to a person who really qualifies as the godmother of this broadcast, an old friend from this radio station and a couple of others who first put a bug in the ear of Queen Ruth about this broadcast beginning at KCRW in Santa Monica, those many years ago. And as the fates of radio irony would have it, she then ended up broadcasting a long-lived show featuring the Beatles, a subject on which she became expert, opposite this very broadcast. So her fans never heard this broadcast and vice versa. But anyway, she passed last week. A fond farewell to Deirdre O'Donohue and a salute from the four guys whom she helped to immortalize. She didn't immortalize them, but she helped as we begin this edition of Hello, Welcome to the Show.
Rosetta. Sweet Loretta Fat, she thought she was a cleaner, but she was a frying pan. Yeah, the picture. The picker. Picks with the fingers, great. Okay.
Thank you. I'm a drummer and I can't keep the beat. And when I wake up tomorrow, there'll be something wrong with my feet. At your left, at your right, but my eyes are open all night. I won't wake up tomorrow. For God's sake, I'm already awake. You can lay out a spread a mile long, but whether you can't go slow. I don't want to live that. I'm already fat. My appetite split to Hong Kong. So you see where I am. I got no breath in front of your jam. And when I wake up tomorrow, my tears will be bursting the dam. Won't you meet me on the corner by 2:30? Can't you hear me calling you? Ain't there something you can do to shed a little light, to make it all right so the dog won't bite and I can sleep all night? I'm in some kind of fix.
Some kind of fix.
I'm a drummer and I can't find my sticks. And when I wake up tomorrow, I'll be forgetting all of my licks. Am I down on my luck?
Down on my luck.
If it walks like a duck, it's a duck.
It's a duck.
And I see myself walking. Over there, someone just dropped a buck. You can put me a ball, or we'll ride through. Give me the house that I choose. Where do I sign to make it all mine? Or did I just hear some more made up news? But that's the way that it goes. There's a steady stream in the door. If I try locking that door, they'll be breaking it down, that's for sure. Won't you meet me on the corner by 2:30? Can't you hear me calling you? Ain't there something you can do? Shed a little light, make it all right, so the dog won't bite and they can sleep all night. So you see what I got?
See what I got?
I got some kind of weird ass wire. I better work on my story. Or at least begin to give it a shot.
Hello, welcome to the show from the edge of America, from the home, oh, the homeless. I'm Harry Shearer, and this would be just another edition, but it's the Super Sunday edition of the show, so it's got to be special, don't you think? I do. In case you're wondering, what's the hippest, what's the biggest, hottest thing in Afghanistan? I know you were wondering that. I read your, it's Titanic. Well, it had to be big somewhere. Amid the privation, destruction, and austere Islamic edicts of Afghanistan, the capital's young men, capital being Kabul, not Kabul, Kabul, the capital's young men have been lining up for haircuts to look like the hero of Titanic. The ruling Taliban, hey, they're good people. They're people-pleasing people. Intent on creating the world's purest Islamic state and contemptuous of almost everything from the West, they are not amused. You know, amusing the Taliban has not been high on my list of entertainment priorities. I don't know about James Cameron. The religious police, who enforce an interpretation of Islam that includes a ban on shaving, have detained dozens of barbers for trimming the hair of the capital's youth in the Titanic style, witnesses say. We don't know for sure the precise number of the arrested people, but reportedly they exceed 30 and have been in jail for over a week now for giving a Titanic hairstyle, said one barber, who didn't want to be identified, strangely enough. Lock up the barbers in Kabul. The Titanic hairstyle leaves the fringe That's what the Brits call bangs. Untrimmed would be the front, I guess. And the back, shortly cropped in emulation of Leonardo DiCaprio. The religious police have warned us against the use of Titanic and other Western hair fashions, another barber said. The tale of love and disaster has captivated Afghans who are seeking an escape from their own disaster. The Titanic name is attached to anything an Afghan merchant can sell: cosmetics, clothes, footwear, wedding cakes, and vehicles. Well, that would be a trustworthy vehicle, the Titanic. Did they not get it? Did they not get the joke of the movie? Buying a vehicle called a Titanic? Well, there probably are no icebergs in Afghanistan, so I wouldn't have to. Officials of the Taliban Religious Police, formerly known as the Ministry of Prevention of Vice and the Promotion of Virtue. Hey, Bill Bennett would be good for that job, wouldn't he? Bill Bennett is the American Taliban? Anyway, officials of the Afghanistani version of the Bill Bennett police declined to comment about the recent arrests, merely insisting that Afghans must not mimic Western ways. The Titanic haircut, ladies and gentlemen, it's taking over. What's the name of that police again? The Ministry of Prevention of Vice and Promotion of Virtue. I say send Bill Bennett over to Afghanistan now. Slap a few thousand airmail stamps on that big old body, that big old impulse control problem-riddled body, and ship it over there before he does any more damage. Because you see, ladies and gentlemen, when you look at the pardons that did not get attention from Bill Clinton last week, the ones that did not make the papers, were the pardons for a bunch of people who were serving mandatory minimum sentences on drug charges. Thank you, Bill Bennett. In most cases, women who were not even accomplices, who were basically living in the same house where drug dealers did their business. And the only way the drug dealers could get reduced sentences was by turning in their girlfriends. Thank you, Bill Bennett, oh master of virtue, who has never, I believe, never been treed on the subject publicly since he left the office of drug czar. So we try to treat him here remotely. Hey, Grammy-winning pop singer Christina Aguilera, who has an apartment in Manhattan, but is considered home to be Wexford, Pennsylvania. Hey, babe, I know the feeling. Has purchased a home in the Beverly Hills area for just under $2.8 million. You know, Christine, you could have bought in Beverly Hills. You don't have to be in the area. A former member of the new Mickey Mouse Club, I guess that explains everything. She bought a Mediterranean-style home in a gated community with three bedrooms and maid's quarters in more than 7,000 square feet. You know, this gated community thing is just going a little too far. Now, I don't mean for Christina Aguilera. She needs the security. But I mean, all around the country, everybody is just trying to live like in the Beverly Hills area. Open up, won't you? Built about 10 years ago, the home on slightly more than an acre also has an office, library. Yeah, we'll be seeing her in there a lot. Screening room, wine cellar, gym, and grassy yard with a rose garden, pool, and city views. Grassy yard. Because it rains here so very, very often. Well, it rained here this week. It's okay. Rock star Ozzy Osbourne has sold his Beverly Hills home for about the same price he paid for it 3 years ago, $3.5 million. He was asking $3.9, down from $4.5, so Ozzy made no profit. But it was a nice place to eat bats. While the six-bedroom, 9,000-square-foot home had been listed on and off since November 99, when he bought a much bigger Beverly Hills home for about $6.5 million. All right, that's fair. The Italian-style gated home he just sold has a two-story foyer, a butler's pantry, and a paddler's buttery. A staff room, three family bedrooms, and a master suite with a fireplace and a terrace. Built in 1991, the home also has a guest house, or Gasthaus, with two baths, or baths, a pool, a spa, and European gardens. Yeah, he gained notoriety. It says right here in the real estate column, he gained notoriety for biting the head off a live bat during a concert. But he doesn't do that in Beverly Hills. Please, he cooks the bats first. You got to. Downtown Julie Brown? I don't know. Actor Eddie Murphy, that's more like it, has purchased about 2.5 acres where he plans to build a home in the Beverly Hills area. What's with this area stuff? Buy in Beverly Hills, why don't you? What's the deal? You know what Beverly Hills area means, ladies and gentlemen. It means in the city of Los Angeles, but a mailman who also delivers mail in Beverly Hills comes and delivers mail at your house, too. The property was not on the market, but Murphy offered more than the $5.5 million paid by the owner last May. The owner was not eager to sell. So Murphy upped the price close to the double-digit mark. And kneecap. No, he did not. The land is in a guarded gate community where all the lots have been sold and most of the community is developed. You don't want to sell? How about this? How about this? How about this? Okay. So the pardons that did get attention from Bill Clinton last weekend, the pardon of Mark Rich, who was described one of the phrases that has achieved immortality in the news business, along with terrible tragedy, and the favorite of a friend of mine, makeshift morgue, one of the less dire phrases that has just achieved cliche immortality in the news business is fugitive financier. I believe it was invested for Robert Vesco, but it's been applied to many since then, and most recently to this guy, Mark Rich, the rich Mark Rich. And he got a pardon from Bill Clinton at the behest, interestingly enough, of Mark Rich's new attorney, who was Jack Quinn, formerly attorney for Bill Clinton. Now, Mark Rich has tried everybody. He formerly had as his attorney Leonard Garment, who used to be the aide to Richard Nixon. So Mark Rich doesn't care who does his business, but he got this pardon, and everybody's all up in arms. Even though, if you read deeply into the story, apparently he did some behind the scenes diplomatizing, or more correctly, used some of his money to lubricate better relations between the Egyptians and the Israelis behind the scenes. So it's not all that it's cracked up to be in the media. Oddly enough, not cracked up enough by the Clinton haters. And by the way, the Clinton haters are now showing their true colors. When he was president, they didn't dare utter these words. And this confirms, ladies and gentlemen, just to be a little bit self-promoting, which I'm normally and not, as you know. But even to say that is self-promotion, so where do you go? But it confirms one of the theories in my little book about why people hate Clinton that came out while he was still president, called It's the Stupidity Stupid, which had to do with class. I said the word. You're not supposed to say that word in America. So now that he's out of office, he leaves office with some gifts, taking some gifts that were given to him. And this earned him from Oliver North, Paul Harvey, and somebody, Michael Barone, three fine conservative commentators, all indulged in the phrase that dared not be uttered while Bill Clinton was president, all said, this proves that he was nothing more than white trash, ladies and gentlemen. So again, as I say, but let's be fair. Let's go down some of these gifts, shall we? From Barbara Allen Belfast, a watercolor of the Clinton ancestral homestead. From the Georgetown University alumni class of 1968, a $38,000 Dale Chihuly basket set. From Arthur Athis in Los Angeles, dining chairs. From Dendiz Badarak in Mongolia, two drawings of Mongolian landscapes. From Bruce Burnson of Santa Barbara, a golf putter. From Mr. and Mrs. Bill Brandt of Winnetka, Illinois, china. From Ken Burns, a photograph of Duke Ellington with Ken Burns talking all over it. From Eli Calloway, a golf driver. From Iris Cantor of New York, china. From Robin Carnahan and Nina Ganchi of St. Louis, two sweaters. From Glen Eden Carpets in Calhoun, Georgia. Is that Carpets of Calhoun? Two carpets. From Dale Chihuly, $22,000 Dale Chihuly glass sculpture. From Colette Detremont of Canada, flatware. From Mary Steenburgen and Ted Danson, China. From Dennis Doucette in Coral Gables, Florida, golf bag, shirt, canvas bag, and book. From Ronald and Beth Dozoritz, Washington, D.C., dining table, server, and golf club. From Marvin Evans of Chicago, $5,000 rug. From Lee Fix of Cincinnati, kitchen table and four chairs. From Paul Goldenberg of La Habra, California, televisions and DVD player. From Myra Greenspan of Green Valley, Nevada, flatware. From Vinat Gupta of Omaha, Nebraska, leather jacket. From Hal Cunnicutt of Conway, Arkansas, golf irons. From Gada Irani of Los Angeles, flatware. Jill and Ken Isschool, Pound Ridge, New York, china and a jacket. From Mr. and Mrs. Walter Kay of New York, he got Monica her job, a travel humidor, china cabinet, chandelier, and a copy of President Lincoln's Cooper Union speech. From Steve Litkahans of Morton Grove, Illinois, golf clubs. From Steve Mittman of New York, two sofas, an easy chair, and ottoman. From Katsura Miura of Japan, a golf driver. Another golf driver from Jack Nicholson. Another sofa from Brad Noe of High Point, North Carolina. From Mr. and Mrs. Joe Panko of Concord, North Carolina, three golf putters. And from Brian B. Reddy of Chappaqua, New York, their new neighbor, a painting of Buddy. Now, ladies and gentlemen, in all fairness, when Ronald Reagan, he of the throwing the football across the country or Frank Sinatra throwing the football across the country and Ronald Reagan catching it, something like that. I forget now how the stunt worked. When Ronald Reagan left the presidency, his friends and advisors, that is to say, his money club, bought him a house. Forget about a golf club and drivers and a sofa and a painting and lamps. Ooh, Sylvester Stallone gave him boxing gloves, $300 worth of boxing gloves from Sylvester Stallone. Forget about that. They bought him a house. They bought Ronald Reagan a house. This was $190,000 worth of gift. Ronald Reagan was purchased a house in Bel Air, California. But he wasn't white trash.
I don't believe in fretting and grieving. Why mess around with strife? I never was cut out to step and strut out. Give me the simple life. Some find it pleasant dining on pheasant. Those things roll off my knife. Just serve me tomatoes and mashed potatoes. Give me the simple life. A cottage small is all I'm after. Not one that's spacious and wide. A house that rings with joy and laughter. And the ones you love inside. Some like the high road. The low road, free from the care and strife. Sounds corny and seedy, but yes, indeedy, give me the simple life. I never was cut out to step and strut out. Give me the simple life. Just serve me tomatoes and mashed potatoes. Give me the simple life. A cottage small is all I'm after. Not one that's spacious and wide. A house that rings with joy and laughter. And the ones you love inside. Some like the high road. I like the low road. Free from the care and strife. Sounds corny and seedy, but yes, indeedy. Give me the simple, simple life. Give me the simple, simple life. Ooh, do, 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 do.
From CPR, Continental Public Radio, this is Mouth to Mouth. Mouth to Mouth, an audio encounter with a personality in or out of the news. I'm Ira Zipkin in Washington. California's electricity crisis has spurred renewed interest in the subject of electric power, the mysterious force that makes so much of modern life possible. CPR special correspondent Aviva Schlorman sat down this week with someone who helped plug much of America in. A visit to the advertising icon country home is like a walk into our collective unconscious past. Sitting in a wheelchair watching television in the spacious living room is Madge. We used to give manicures with the help of a dishwashing liquid. Down the hall, playing dominoes, are Mr. Whipple and the two surviving pet boys. But we're here to meet the advertising symbol of the electricity industry for more than four decades, 85-year-old Reddy Kilowatt. He greets us in the home's recreation room where, ironically, no recreation is occurring.
Aviva, I was the face and the voice of electricity for much of the 20th century. Did you know that I helped to popularize the concept of the all-electric home, where even, you know, the stuff you're supposed to do with gas was done with electricity? Of course, if we knew then what we know now, you know, who knows?
Reddy, first of all, how do you get that name? It's so catchy, so evocative, electric.
Interesting story, Aviva. My real first name is Redmond. I'm named after an Irish uncle of mine, but because I used to have a very ruddy complexion, everybody called me Reddy. So when I went to the audition, some producer at the table, he just blurts out, "Reddy! Kilowatt! Reddy Kilowatt!" Then they all laughed, and then, you should pardon the expression, it was like a light bulb went on over their heads.
We all remember you, those of us of a certain age, as being an animated character. Yet here you are.
Well, of course, Aviva, in the early days of television, animation was far too expensive. It was much cheaper for them to just pay to get me into plastic surgery that made me look animated. And, of course, that work wasn't all that great back then, so...
So you keep the lights lowered.
That I do.
But when you look at the electricity situation in California today, what do you think?
Aviva, you know, I was paid to embody the availability of electricity around the clock, like the kids say, 24/7, at a reasonable price. Mm. So now it looks like they're making old Reddy out to be a liar. You know, I don't appreciate that. As a matter of fact, my friends Manny and Jack...
The surviving pep boys.
That's right. Mo died last year of congestive heart failure. Mm. God rest his soul. Manny and Jack say I should sue, you know, but I'm sitting here thinking, A, who do I sue? B, do I really want to go to court every day with this face? And C, yeah, forget it, you know? I mean, life goes on and off, you know what I mean?
After you stopped being Reddy Kilowatt, what did you do?
Oh, I had a wild career, Aviva. I think I still am, the planet's only Wayne Newton impersonator. I travel with a show called Donkey Shane Live. We played Laughlin, Nevada, Biloxi, Mississippi, all the spots.
Ever play Branson?
No, ma'am. That's one of my few regrets.
Ready back again to the crisis in California. Are you a fan of so-called public power? Do you favor deregulation and privatization? Or do you come down on neither side?
Well, Aviva, I was hired help, you know? I mean, I was talent, you know? I still don't, to this day, know what the hell electricity is, for God's sake. I know there's AC and DC, and that and a dollar could get me an extra Demerol, which, at this point, would not be a bad idea.
Any regrets?
You mean besides not getting the Demerol?
Yes.
Frankly, the comeback of electric shock treatment embarrasses me a little bit. You know, as a matter of fact, if Dick Cavett is listening, I'd like to apologize to him right now. If not, some other time, maybe.
Reddy, looking back on an amazing career, anything you'd do differently?
You know what, Aviva? Knowing what I know now, I'd probably tell him to animate me and forget it. You know, after 50 years, everything drops, I still look like some cartoon. But it was a great ride. The electricity providers and producers are some wonderful folks, much nicer than the oil and gas people whom I've also met, believe me. But putting an almost human face on a very confusing industry, I feel like I've made a contribution. Yeah, I really do.
Then Reddy Kilowatt shuffles back down the hall, and electricity resumes its place as a faceless force in an in-your-face world. I'm Aviva Schlorman. Next week on Mouth to Mouth, Aviva Schlorman talks to Elizabeth Taylor about what it's like to talk to Larry King. I'm Larry Zipkin, zipping up this edition of Mouth to Mouth. This is CPR, Continental Public Radio.
Until my daddy come. Ain't no blue man on the blue man's son. Gonna sing this song until my daddy come. Till my daddy come. Till my daddy come. I'm gonna sing this song, baby, till my daddy come. Ain't no ice man on the ice man's son. I'll keep you cool until my daddy come. Ain't no Iceman, I'm the Iceman's son. I'll keep you cool until my daddy come. Till my daddy come. Till my daddy come. I'm gonna keep you cool, baby, till my daddy come. Well, I ain't no woodman, I'm the woodman's son. I chop your log until my daddy come. Ain't no woodman, I'm the woodman's son. Gonna chop your log until my daddy come. Till my daddy come. Till my daddy come. I'm gonna chop your log, baby, till my daddy come. Well, I ain't no postman, I'm the postman's son. I'll lick your stamp until my daddy come. Ain't no postman, I'm the postman's son. But lick your stamp until my daddy come. Till my daddy come. Till my daddy come. I'm gonna lick your stamp, mama, till my daddy come. Until my daddy come. Ain't no blue man, I'm the blue man's son. Gonna sing this song until my daddy come. Till my daddy come. Till my daddy come. I'm gonna sing this song, baby, till my daddy come.
This is LeShow bringing you news of the digital wonderland. If you buy a new DirecTV high-definition set-top box, and why would you, you may be surprised to learn that it includes a previously undisclosed feature, the ability for the company to unexpectedly, at any time, shut down its high-definition capabilities. That's because DirecTV has made all the set-top box makers install a circuit that allows DirecTV to turn off the box's high-def abilities at will, forcing the viewers to revert to standard TV. This previously undisclosed circuit is called Copy Generation Management System, CGMS. It's a way that program providers can prevent copying of high-definition movies and programs. Here they go again. I'm telling you. The Movie Industries Trade Association has expressed the desire to end the ability of viewing HDTV content via analog outputs on set-top boxes to prevent copying. They feel the box's analog outputs may give consumers the ability to illegally copy and redistribute movies and programs in high definition. At present, however, there are no consumer high-definition recorders available with analog inputs. And nonetheless, the motion picture industry wants high-def to be available only via encrypted digital outputs. Currently, no consumer display device contains an encryption-enabled digital input. You know what I'm saying? You know, you get it. Don't do it. Don't buy digital TV anything, okay? But now, ladies and gentlemen, let me read the trades for you, if I may. From Advertising Age, urban media face ad bias, study shows. What? Bias in America? Somebody playing the race card? I'll read it for you. A new report from the author of a controversial 1999 FCC study on minority media claims to prove that advertisers discriminate against minority-owned and urban format radio stations. Urban format is ad speak for appealing to black audiences. While confined to the radio industry, the new study's release escalates a contentious debate. The report was conducted by Kofi Ofori and was commissioned by parties that have an interest in minority media advertising. The new study asserts that discrimination isn't the main reason minority-owned and urban format stations don't get their fair share of advertising, but that it represents two of the top reasons. According to some of the people interviewed, the study said, agencies tend to employ young white women to place advertising, most of who have had little exposure to racial ethnic minorities throughout their life experience, unquote. Most of who? The report calls on the FCC and the Federal Trade Commission to establish a joint task force to continually monitor the status of disparities in the radio industry and adopt standards for acceptable advertising practices, unquote. Ad groups last week welcomed the study and agreed with the conclusion in the study that media buying isn't scientific enough. Hey, you know what? They'll solve it all. CBS will own all the radio stations. There won't be minority-owned stations anymore. End of problem. See how easy it is when I read the trades for you? It is a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I don't know if you saw the news, the big news in the media and advertising world this week. I think the news that, buffeted by plummeting stock prices, the resignation of its founder, and other problems, Priceline.com, which has had some weird kind of animated commercial on television the last few days, announced officially this week that they were replacing their spokesperson, William Shatner, replacing him with the star of HBO's Sex in the City, Sarah Jessica Parker. Priceline and Ms. Parker had no comment. Mr. Shatner headed straight for the club.
Are you ready, boys? This one's the keeper. The problem is all inside your head, he said to me. I said, for an agent, you talk too much of sensitivity. Is there something we can threaten? He said, just listen to me. There must be 50 ways to leave your sponsor. He said, you're still getting paid your princely sum, so it would be unseemly to denounce these folks as scum. They've replaced you with a sexy girl. You better learn to come to see the 50 ways to leave your sponsor. Just make out a will, Bill. Get a new job, Bob. Fire the band, Van. Set yourself free. Try to get a big part, Bart. Direct your own film. Write a short book, Schnook. Do it for free. Oh, he said, it grieves me so to see you feel such shame after all you've done to build up the reputation of the name. But people will remember you even if the spots were lame. So use the 50 ways to leave your sponsor. I said, being replaced by a sexy girl on pay TV just isn't what I thought of as the way it's supposed to be. Was it my toupee, my ex-wife's death, or was it simply me? He said 50 ways to leave your sponsor. 50 ways to leave your sponsor. Just say that you quit, wit, if we fought about dojo. Say you've got too much to do, Lou, you've set yourself free. Say that company's jive clive, that you hated the boss, hoss, or say nothing at all, Paul. Just set yourself free. Oh, Priceline and I used to be like this. Naming your own price seemed so cool. But after the head guy quit and the stock became more worthless than a Leonard Nimoy script, well, let them renew my contract. Ha! Don't make me mind meld. Just go on a trip, Flip. Work on a new act, Jack. Stay out of the pool, Buell. You're working for free. Get into a play, Jay. Write some new memoirs, Lars. Record a CD, Lee. Just set yourself free.
Que não sai de mim, não sai de mim, não sai. Mas se ela voltar, que coisa linda, que coisa louca. Pois há menos peixinhos a nadar no mar do que os beijinhos que eu darei na sua boca. Dentro dos meus braços os abraços são de ser milhões de abraços apertados assim, colados assim, calados assim. Abraços e beijinhos e carinhos sem ter fim. Que é pra acabar com esse negócio de você viver sem mim. Não quero mais esse negócio de você tão longe assim. Vamos deixar desse negócio de viver longe de mim.
Ladies and gentlemen, confirmation that some of us were right all along. A appeals court judge has ruled this week that nothing was wrong with O.J.'s civil trial, that the jury finding indicated that he did kill two people. Meanwhile, O.J. on a golf course in Miami had no comment. Interesting media observation, a story in the Los Angeles Dog Trainer, which, yes, occasionally I do read. about Wolfgang Puck closing Spago in Hollywood. He had to go to the bottom of the jump, the second page that the story was on, to find, you know, they have all these sociological reasons. Hollywood's changing, and he's opened a new restaurant, and thing. You have to go, and this is in the business section, ladies and gentlemen. You have to go to the bottom of the next page before you find out this information, that the average amount of the check at the Hollywood Spago is $45. At the New Beverly Hills Spago, it's $70. Why write the rest of the story if you know that? The results are coming in case those of you are interested in who we elected for president. If dimpled ballots in Palm Beach County had been counted as votes, Al Gore would have picked up 682, according to the Palm Beach Post's examination of the dimpled ballots. The analysis showed that more than two-thirds of the disputed ballots were cast on data punch voting machines. Even those machines were less than one-third of the ballots cast in the county. Republicans scoff, saying the Supreme Court made it clear that the disputed dimpled ballots should not count. Okay. How about the Washington Post's survey? Florida voters who spoiled their ballots last November because they punched more than one presidential candidate's name were three times more likely to vote for Al Gore than for Bush, citing its review of computerized records for 2.7 million votes in eight Florida counties, the largest. Democratic voters who intended to vote for Gore were more likely to have invalidated their ballots than Republican voters supporting Bush. According to the Post analysis, the biggest problem for Gore was in overvotes. The Democratic votes also appeared to have been disproportionately affected because of the butterfly ballot. 8,000 voters whose ballots were thrown out because they chose Mr. Gore and one of the other presidential candidates listed near him voted more than 10-1 Democratic in the United States Senate race. The Post review indicated that because of problems with voting machinery, thousands of voters went to the polls only to have none of their ballots in any races counted. All right, what about the Chicago Tribune? More than 1,700 votes that showed a clear choice in Florida's election were discarded in the 15 counties that had the highest rate of rejected ballots. An examination of discarded ballots found that in 5,000 other cases, apparent presidential votes were lost because a variety of mistakes made it impossible to be certain of the intent. Contrary to popular perception, the highest rate of discarded ballots came from 15 counties that used paper ballots filled in with pencils, so go figure, not the counties that used the punch card ballots. So who won? Well, we'll never know. Or we will. But anyway, there's a guy in the office now, basically from the media consensus, rushing to not be liberal, consensus that he had a good first week. Interesting. He, George W. Bush, reinstated the old ban on federal aid to family planning agencies abroad that may have used other funds to counsel for abortions. No outcry. First week of President Clinton's term, first term, he tried to make it possible for gays to serve in the military. Major outcry. I don't know. You figure it out. But as I say, the media are saying he had a good first week. Alan Greenspan did a 180 and suddenly decided tax cuts were good. Somebody counted the votes. Somebody counted some votes. And one of the stories, and George W. Bush has been rushing to have meeting after meeting with Democrats and Republicans in Congress to extend the hand. And one of the stories said that the charm offensive worked partly because one of the things he did when he met with congressmen and senators was revive a practice he'd indulged in his meetings with legislators in Texas, which is he gave each of these guys a nickname.
Hey, gentlemen. Yeah. Hey, Trent.
Yeah. Good morning, Mr. President.
Trentino.
Senator Lott or Trent would be fine.
Mm-hmm. Or El Trento.
Or El Trento, sure.
Hey, there's Phil. Big Phil.
Hi, Mr. President.
Hey, Big Phil. Ooh, we go way back, huh? Oh,
I've been Big Phil for 6 years now.
You sure have. Hey, Joe. Joey. Jojo.
Hello, Mr. President.
Yeah, I know it's a tough adjustment there. Joe the Jew. How's that?
It's fine, sir.
Yeah, it doesn't bother you, does it?
No, not nearly as much as seeing Dick Cheney in my house.
Okay, Trento, here's Big Phil, Joe the Jew. Good meeting.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Trento.
It was good.
Get lunch.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this very Super Sunday edition of the show. The program returns next week on just a regular Sunday basis over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the Armed Forces Network, on shortwave at WBCQ The Planet at 7.415 megahertz, and on your computer via the internet around the world whenever you want it at www.kcrw.com. And it would be just like getting my own nickname if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of SAS, a satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.